You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Wednesday, 25 June. We've got U.S. new home sales data due 4 o'clock this afternoon. I'm Simon Brown coming at you live and loud from MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Kenyon Yana, Scope Prime Oil. On Friday, I was saying, oh, surely the trend is higher. Man, that price action Monday and then, of course, Tuesday. Is the world awash with oil? How bad is that for Sasol? And I want to touch local banks. Still cheap. Some cheaper than others. Absolutely ridiculously so. They value that. But chatting with Bradley Sack, CEO of Capital Appreciation. Results, very good payments growth. Software struggling a bit. Chetan Ramler, he is from Stanlib Systematic Solutions, AI and machine learning in the investment process. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, mystery debit orders leave bank a client without answers. Woman later found she was linked to Debbie Check, but insists she never received an authorization request. Business Day, David Musondo defends 27 billion rand World Bank loan. Deputy Finance Minister says loan is for infrastructure to grow the economy. Morning markets, the US was green, S&P up 1.1%, NASDAQ 1.5% higher. Over in the East, mostly green, Sydney up 0.1%, Tokyo down 0.1%, Hong Kong up 0.8% and Tencent 0.2% higher. Commodities, mostly red. Gold futures, 3,344. Brent, 6,809. Platinum, which is green, is 1,330. And palladium, a little softer at 1,073. The rand is 1,776. Bitcoin, 106,500. Top 40 opening call, 320 points to the green, or a little over 0.33% higher.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Keir Nunyana now from Scope Prime. Keir, appreciate the time this morning. Friday I was talking and saying that surely the bias for oil was higher or maybe stable, but Monday came, and that after we had seen the US attacks on Iran, and the price action was not, I mean, it went higher, but I got and drifted lower. Of course, collapsed yesterday. It's kind of suggesting to me the world is perhaps awash with oil?
It truly is. I mean, if you look at the oil price over the past 3 years, I mean, it topped out at about 133 and it's been in a bearish consolidation to about 68. I mean, that's where I think it finds a lower end on the support. But I think the fundamental story here is China has been buying Iranian oil at less than market price and buys close to about 90% Iranian oil. Also buys oil from Russia and Venezuela. All of these three countries are all sanctioned, meaning that they're getting oil at less than market price. What really put a geopolitical risk premium on the price of Brent crude was the fact that if maybe they can't get the oil, the cheap oil from Iran, they'll come to normal to non-sanctioned countries and push the price up. And that's really what really kept that price up for such a long time over the past 2 weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I remember with the Russian sanctions, I mean, there was a talk of you couldn't sell for more than $60. We were almost back at that point. And in fact, we've been slightly below it. This, of course, and we saw it in the share price action yesterday, chemicals are weak, oil, wash with oil. Man, bad space to be for Sasol.
Truly speaking, and I think Sasol has had a couple of positive things which I think were not planned. I mean, the 4.3 billion rand settlement with Transnet and essentially them kicking down the road, they dead plans in the fact that their dividend cover needs to be extremely higher, and it truly was good things for the for the Sasol share price. But what I find interesting, Si, is that when I look at the relative strength index of Sasol, I'm seeing a lot more institutional buying than I see, because retailers catch up to institutions. So it's always very smart to watch what smart money is doing. And in the past 2 weeks, there's been a lot of institutional buying of Sasol. Don't know from who, but I see a lot of institutional buying at just on a technical basis.
Okay, I get your point. And I mean, they've also perhaps got a longer time frames, and of course they've always got deeper pockets. That's not surprising. Let's change track entirely. Talking banks, I'm going to get to pick your brain on that. The Satrix Finney is pretty much back at all-time highs. The banks themselves are absolutely very cheap. First round, still cheap, but we've got sort of mid to high PEs, mid to high dividend yields. In a zero growth environment, banks attractive to you? Are you seeing valuation here, or is this just a sector which surely can't do much in a 1% GDP world?
I think the answer lies in our top line equity index, the top 40. I mean, the JSE has undergone a severe and rapid collapse over the past 2 weeks. And you see that from broad-based bullishness to clear risk off. And this is just speaking to the defensive rotation. And what that just means is capital's flowing out of the cyclical resource stocks and into defensive havens like banks. And essentially, that's essentially what's been happening over the past 2 weeks, is that there's just been a different view of risk. It's probably from institutions as well. Mm-hmm. And they've just been piling money into the banks. Are the banks showing great value? If you had to look at the dividend yield versus the PEs, the banks are showing great value. I think at the top end, you find Capitec, which is, I think, a bit overpriced, even though it has a good story to tell. Mm-hmm. Investec, which has done well over the past 10 years. And then you find the ones who are just steady growers like First Rand and Standard Bank, and the ones who have like Nedbank and Absa, all showing value right across. I think I wouldn't touch Capitec, but the rest of them, I think the rest of them are showing great value with single to low-digit PEs.
Yeah, it is crazy. And in some cases, in the case of Absa, the dividend yield is above the PE, which is a bit mind-boggling. We'll leave it there. Kenyon Yon at Scope Prime, always appreciate the early morning time. And our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter, about that oil price as it falls back below 70. Big question is the world awash with excess oil? Kia saying absolutely it is. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. Give you money, smoother returns for Stanlib Asset Management. The Stanlib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Bradley Sachs, CEO of Capital Appreciation. Results for the year-end March, revenue up 7.6%, HEPS up 25.6%, and the full-year dividend up 20%. Bradley, appreciate the early morning time. I was going to say a strong period for payments. Truthfully, a very strong period for payments. It is a sector that booms and seems to have a bright future ahead of it as you pick up some more large long-term contracts.
Yes, good morning, Simon. Thank you. For the observation, our payments division did exceptionally well during this period. It was something that we signaled during the half-year mm-hmm. results and at the results presentation last year.
How many terminals do you have out there now in
customer
hands?
There were a number
hands?
Of contracts.
Sorry, we lost you there for a second, Bradley. How many terminals do you have out there now in customer hands?
We have over 420,000 terminals in customer hands.
And are you obviously yeah, the
and that's
sorry, carry on, Bradley.
Sorry, that's grown from when we purchased the business of 30,000. So it's been a more than 10x growth in the estate over a 7 year period. So we have done very nicely and very proud of what the team have accomplished.
And you obviously the terminals go out and into the market. Do you earn on the transaction fee as swaps are happening through the terminals? Is there a fee back to Capital Appreciation as well?
No, we don't earn money on the transaction activity at the point of sale unless it relates to one of our software related products that gives rise to a transaction. Then on that we do receive a transaction fee. What we do receive is a monthly estate management fee and then a software fee for the software that exists on the estate on the terminal estate.
What is typical duration of contracts? You were mentioning it earlier, but we lost the line a bit there. What is your typical contract duration?
So they range between 3 and 5 years in general.
Okay. A very competitive space, and we're seeing sort of more non-banks entering the space. That in some sense, I suppose, maybe even assists because you've got a bit of that head start. As you said, you got this business 7 years ago. You've grown it well more than 10x. It is competitive, but you're confident of your position within it.
So there are different elements that are competitive. I think if you think of the likes of Yoko and others in that position, they are competitive, but not with us. They are competitive with the customers that we serve. Our primary customers, Nedbank, FNB, Standard Bank, etc., are our customers, and then they compete with the likes of Yoko and others.
Gotcha.
So we have a derivative type business as it relates to that competitive dynamic.
Gotcha, gotcha. You talked in the results around regional expansion with payments into Africa. Is this terminals, or is this more of your sort of other offerings? Because the payments business is terminals, but there's more to it than just that.
Absolutely. So it's a combination of both. The terminal for us is a device to get into the market, but where we are finding great traction at the moment is the software that runs on the terminals. And we can run our software on terminals that we provide as well as terminals that we do not provide. And for us, we think there's an interesting opportunity and play in Africa on both dimensions. We also have a solution called Halo Dot, which is a tap on glass solution, which allows any phone today that is NFC compliant. In fact, I take that back. It's not any phone, it's any device that is NFC compliant can now become a payment acceptance device. And in our presentation yesterday, we showed an example where we deployed Halo Dot within the Pick n Pay clothing estate, where they had devices that were Android based. They were used for stock picking and inventory management by people who manned the store. And those are now turned into payment acceptance devices using for us. That's a really compelling opportunity across Africa and other parts of the world. And what's really important and impressive for us is that solution is now even available on the Apple platform, which is a removal of a real barrier in conversations with.
Your software division, revenue down 7.6%. When I chatted with your colleague at mid-year, it was tough. It continued tough. Are you seeing any signs of improvement as you sort of moved into the H2, or perhaps even post-year end, which would have been March?
We did have a much better H2 than we did in H1, and we have taken some real remedial measures to help right the ship in our software business. It was a disappointing performance given its prior excellent delivery. And we've started with our primary clients taking on a better tone, but we still haven't seen the floodgates open with a ton of opportunity. But it's something that we're working on diligently. And we are, as I indicated yesterday, maniacally focused on managing our costs, which we are doing.
And you talk costs. Last question is around a very strong cash generation, just over 400 million on the balance sheet. Your dividend's up 20%, but you still got a lot of cash there. I imagine you're looking for some acquisitions, perhaps, but maybe more bolt-on, or could that money be used internally?
So our first priority is to fund organic growth because there is tremendous organic opportunities in both our software and our payments business. So we are going to fund organic growth. Second, we look for opportunities, and to the extent we believe there is something to do, we will set aside the capital to be able to do that. And thereafter, we will look for ways to return capital to shareholders, which is what we did this time with a 20% increase in dividend. So overall, I think we've delivered close on 60 cents in dividends to shareholders in the last few years, and we'll continue to work hard on their behalf.
That's Bradley Sachs, CEO, Capital Appreciation. Appreciate the early morning time. The Standard Flexible Income Fund delivers capital preservation and consistent top quartile inflation beating returns. Let your money keep working with Standard Asset Management even after you retire.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Chetan Ramla. He's head of quantitative research for Stanlib Systematic Solutions. Chetan, appreciate the time. Ever since ChatGPT came out, what, some 2.5 years ago, the world has been all around AI. Truthfully, we had varying types of it long before that. But let's look at machine learning and why is it important for fund managers to understand it and be involved in it?
Yes, Simon. Firstly, thank you so much for having me. It's really such a fascinating topic, and I think AI really has taken the world by storm over the last couple of years. And I think it's important just to start off understanding what AI is, because I think there's a lot of confusion and sort of misconception between AI and machine learning. So one can sort of think of artificial intelligence as the broad family, and it's sort of the ability of computers and machines to learn and reason and also self-correct. And within this broad family of AI, machine learning is a subset. And it's sort of in the name, learning, where it's the ability for systems to actually automatically learn and improve without them being explicitly programmed. And that's really the key, because what it's doing, it's really unlocking a whole new set of tools for fund managers and essentially anyone across multiple fields.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, touching fields left, right, and center. Can they enhance decision making in the investment process? And perhaps even more importantly, can it help mitigate investment risks?
Yes, completely. So as I said, it's sort of taking us to this new frontier where essentially we aren't, or for the first time in many decades, and for the first time, I guess, in history, we don't have to also rely on traditional data sets, for example. So if you think in the investment case of a company's balance sheet or income statement, or more broadly, their financial statements, tools such as machine learning now are enabling things like alternative data sets to be used. So things as interesting as satellite imagery, or for example, drone footage, for example, which would inform a certain decision, which 10 years ago wasn't possible. But it's only through these new tools that we can harness it. So from both a opportunity perspective as well as risk management, now we can do a whole lot more with the data we have available.
It's here to stay. There's been a lot of talk in the last couple of years around jobs at risk from artificial intelligence. I'm imagining that in the investment manager space, I mean, there are going to be some sectors which might lose some jobs. I'm not sure that it's in the investment manager. As you're explaining it, it's a tool rather than than completely taking over.
That's it. I think the idea and discussion around the job displacement is a fair one, and I think it's one that's gaining more traction. I think we can't sort of keep our heads in the sand. This technology is going to disrupt industries, for sure, and there will be this disruptive effect, especially in the short term. But if you put on a medium to longer term hat, I think what's going to happen is that there's going to be a sort of, let's call it job displacement slash a reimagining of jobs, where there'll be new types of roles that are coming to the fore. Like you mentioned, in the investment management space specifically, these are really tools, and they are tools to augment what we bring to the table as humans and as managers. So I think it will be less of an issue, because wherever our creativity and our skills are applied as humans, that optimal outcome is only achieved by combining both man and machine. So I think we are a very long way from just letting machines sort of run a show.
I hope a very, very long way. But I like your point. It's in the sense of, you know, somebody was doing a task. The artificial intelligence, I mean, my personal experience, it kind of lifts some of those more repetitive, perhaps admin type tasks, and frankly frees me to do the sort of core of my job. In the case of investment managers, to make those decisions, to look and quantify risks, it actually is enhancing. There will be some job shifts, but it enhances the process overall.
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, if you take something as, I mean, anyone in financial services will understand the power of Excel.
Yeah.
I think the world's systems run off Excel and spreadsheets. But if you think of the risk and the inherent risk in running some of these spreadsheet models, now with these new tools, embracing artificial intelligence, machine learning, being able to automate a lot of tasks, that in itself plays such a huge role in risk mitigation, where these repetitive tasks, now suddenly you can actually have them done and have peace of mind that they are being automated, being run robustly, which in itself removes risk and makes things more efficient. And like you correctly point out, what that does is it allows the human to express their creativity, to sort of not worry about repetitive, simple type tasks, but now actually focus on the vision and a more bigger picture type perspective.
Yeah, the AI is kind of doing the grunt work in a sense and not making the final investment decision. I'm imagining this is something which is, I mean, this must now be at Stanlib, and particularly in the systematic solutions, it must be built in and ingrained in the process now. It's kind of there in the background at all points, sometimes even in the foreground.
I think all of us in this industry are at the sort of bottom of the J curve, where this technology is still relatively new, but with each passing month almost, the developments are rapid. I think as with all things, one has to be cautious with how you deploy new technology. And I mean, especially in our team, we are very cautious with how we use it. At the moment, really, we're looking at the sort of value unlocks, like automating work, mm-hmm. helping us summarize research reports, you know, looking at, for example, on the coding and programming side, how can we use AI to help us optimize our coding?
Yeah.
So there's many ways, even deploying certain investment processes to cloud to allow better computation. So there are so many different avenues that one can look at, but with all things, you take it in your stride, approach it cautiously. But the important thing is that people are thinking along these lines and are open to embracing these technologies. I think, you know, the world we're in is very different to one even 10 years ago. The amount of data we have at our disposal is significant. And that means the tools we use have to change and evolve. And that's really the most important point.
It's the embracing, but I also like your point around, this is a J-curve. We are so early into this that it's almost incomprehensible to think of where we end up ultimately, I don't know, 5, 10, certainly 20, 30 years down the line. We leave it there. That's Chetan Ramla. He is Head of Quantitative Research, Stanlib Systematic Solutions. Chetan, appreciate the time.
That's it for today. I was chatting with Tanamongwe from Old Mutual Investment Group yesterday. They are lightening gold exposure, not exiting completely, but reducing their gold exposure, and they are upping their PGM. We asked you, are you switching out of gold for PGM stocks? Around a third each said, nope, staying with gold. The other third saying, I have both. A quarter was saying, yep, great trade, more PGMs for you. The rest were saying, neither for you. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. New code to safeguard market integrity.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.